Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
John, I appreciate what you were trying to do there. This is The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. To any of the more astute listeners out there, our guy John Belmer behind the glass was trying to wait for the come with it now to hit as he played the rejoin, but
they moved it. It's moved in the rejoin.
You know what? We'll just have to move it back next week. We'll have to work on that. We'll get our crack production team.
Nobody's spending effort on that.
Michael Carroll, if we asked him really nicely, might.
Yeah. He's not busy or anything.
Yeah, it's like not like Michael Carroll
he's
has anything
at,
else
he's
to do.
He's at our beck and call at all times.
It's not like he's up here till 7 a.m. or 7 p.m. every day just slaving away to make the station sound good.
Just, hey. Be here until 7:30 one day and work on this.
Yeah. This is The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. That voice you hear to my left, well, I guess you wouldn't hear it to my left, but he is to my left. That's Sean Mapes. I am Andrew Carlson. Our guy John Belmer is behind the glass. We're just having a right old good time here till 2 o'clock. The Rockets discussion has been strong the last couple of segments, and it will continue here. If you want to get in on anything we have to say, you can do so on Twitter. I'm at Carlson Radio. Sean is at Sean A. Mapes. Guy John at Third Coast Johnny. I almost called you Johnny Two Jobs. I'm sorry, John.
Hey, that's a throwback. I'll take it.
Yeah, it's a throwback to the Wheelhouse days, RIP. 4-1 out for the boys. But like I said, the Rockets conversation here is going to continue. And one of the, I don't want to say bad things about Rockets discussion over the course of the season, but I'm going to say that it's a annoying thing, is that it very often just tends to end up being a Jalen Green discussion, right, Sean? Is like, eventually at some point, it just sort of meanders its way into discussing Jalen Green for 5 or 6 minutes. And it became rather annoying because those conversations were nauseatingly negative for an extensive portion of the season. It just, okay, we talked about Rockets for 5 minutes, now let's bash on Jalen Green for the remainder of this segment.
Yeah, it was a situation where the most interesting part about the team was what was happening with Jalen Green. And if you're Jalen Green, it was not a good discussion to have because there wasn't a lot of good things to say. I mean,
there weren't many positives.
It's not like people were being negative for no reason. They're negative because of how he was playing. But obviously, he is now playing a little bit better. Now the conversation gets a little bit more interesting with the Rockets and with Jalen Green specifically.
Yeah, and I'll say this. It doesn't help Jalen Green when his draft mate in Alperen Şengün is having the season that he is having and is seemingly taking the leap that he is.
I mean, that's part of the reason that he was the focal point of a lot of conversation, is that Şengün, I mean, there's not much you can say about, like, man, Şengün's awesome. Not every single night, but, you know, 9 out of 10 nights, Şengün is playing his out of his mind. And then
Jalen Green's just been dropping stinkers for like 90% of the season.
Like, oh, he got benched halfway through the third quarter. That's not good.
Yeah. But look, this past couple of weeks, it has been the best that I think Jalen has looked in his NBA career. I don't think it's me being over exaggerating things or overstating it. Jalen Green, look, he wasn't great last night, 7 of 14, didn't get to the line, didn't make a three, so 7 of 14 for 14 points. But who he has been over the past couple of weeks has been sensational. It has been everything that you wanted to see from him in terms of him and his development as the second round pick. And I would say the best part of it is that it seems to be sustainable. Nothing that he was doing screamed out to me, this is a hot streak that Jalen Green can't continue, because it's not like he was consistently making extremely difficult three-pointers, mid-range shots. What he was doing was he was getting to the line, he was getting to the bucket, and he was doing stuff that you would expect someone with his athletic profile to be capable of doing. And he was also changing up his pace in the game, too. And that's something that I've been super critical of him, and a lot of Rockets fans have been critical of Jalen Green in this aspect, in that he always seems to play at one pace. He doesn't seem to have the ability to slow things down and then speed up, or speed up and slow. Like, it was always just go, go, go all the time. And maybe he's taking a leap. I really hope that that's the case. I'm not going to sit here and say that Jalen Green has 100% turned a corner and this is a difference, but he has looked like a different player the last couple of weeks ever since that game against the, who was it? It was Hornets? Against the Portland Trail Blazers. Oh, okay. That started this run off where he was 12 of 24 from the field, scored 29 points in a loss. And that was the first time in this stretch where it was like, okay, he is looking a little bit different. He's playing the game of basketball a little bit differently. And he's just continued from there. And a lot of it, too, isn't just what he's done in terms of his scoring. It's also been his impact on the other things as well. He's handling the ball better. He's attacking the glass in a different manner.
That to me is the crazy part, is that before the game against the Charlotte Hornets last week, I don't think he had ever had double digit rebounds in a game, and then he went out and he did it for three straight games, pulling down double digit rebounds. So that to me is where you see the, not just the effort in what you're saying, the attacking the rim, the going full speed at the rim, and now learning how to vary his attack a little bit. It's also just a holistic, more effort everywhere. And a lot of times that can show up in the rebounding stats, just show up in who's trying to get rebounds.
Yeah.
And Jalen Green, obviously, something clicked, something changed, and he obviously was making more of an effort on the defensive glass.
And it's interesting, too, because as this sort of resurgence for Jalen was happening, his name started to pop up in trade discussions a little bit, right? Yeah. Is this like trade market Jalen Green? Is this trade rumor Jalen Green? If so, he needs to be in trade rumors for the rest of his Rockets career. But like in the Athletic article that we alluded to, or that mentioned earlier from Kelly Eco and Sham Sharania, if you read between the lines in that article, they basically say Jalen Green is the only one of the core six that they would really consider trading right now. Like, Şengün is untouchable. They're not trading
the
Cam or Amen.
Yeah.
And they don't want to part ways with Jabari. So that the only person not mentioned there,
Jock Landale.
Well, I think he could always be had for the right price.
Extremely touchable in the eyes of, in the eyes of Andrew Carlson.
I don't know if that's a phrase that anyone ever wants to have attached to them. Extremely touchable. But but Jalen Green, if you look at that and read between the lines, he was the only member of the core six that's not mentioned when the team talks about people who they wouldn't be willing to part ways with. And this stretch has sort of reminded me, because I'll be honest with you, Sean. I'll be honest with you, John. Like,
please.
I'm someone who was getting very tired of Jalen Green before this stretch, to the point where I was basically out on the Jalen Green experiment in Houston. I was fully on board with saying, hey, if you can make him a package for a star, I am fully okay with that being the case. And I think I'm still there, but I'm now, after this stretch, much more hesitant, because it reminds you how young he is and how vast his potential still is.
Yeah, that was always the thing when we would have discussions about the Rockets, and that was in some way ranking the core six, the six young guys on this team. And that's what always made Jalen Green so hard to rank, because as far as production out on the court, he was probably last or second to last to whichever, either Amen or Cam, who wasn't playing. And then when you try to factor in potential, though, he's right up there with Şengün.
He's right up at the top.
As far as all-star potential, like a guy you can see making several all-star teams. We all love Tari Eason, but Tari Eason's not going to make an all-star team.
Yeah, he's a great glue guy.
Yeah, a fantastic glue guy, but that's just not what gets rewarded in that way. So that's why Jalen was always kind of like a tough piece to gauge on, at least for me, because I guess I was more patient, not more patient, just less out on Jalen Green. I was kind of resigned to this is not going well whatsoever, but I was always in the camp of give him the rest of the season, and then that's when you, you know, worst comes to worst, that's when you can make make the move, just because to foreclose on the way he can produce in a Ime Udoka offense, to only give him 25, 30 games of that before being like, see you later, pal. That seemed a little too abrupt to me, and I still do think that I think now I'm neutral on trading him at the deadline. Like, I don't actually think it's a good thing, but if it's the right deal, you should make it. But I now am, it's just nice to see that, okay, this is what
there's something
like
here.
This is what exactly it looks like. He's not going to just stink it up for 82 straight games. Like, he can still be a productive basketball player when you're asking him to play winning basketball, which is what he's being asked of him for the first time since high school for him.
Yeah, and I will say this too. Even in the scenario that he is traded at some point, when you see a stretch like this, all of a sudden it gives a team that's watching ability to look and say, okay, there's some talent here. Because if the Rockets were trying to offload him and his season basically looked like what it had for the entire year up until this stretch, you would not have been able to get very much for Jalen Green. All of a sudden you see these flashes of potential, and then a potential suitor might look at him and say, oh, you know what, we'll be willing to take a punt on that, because we believe that there is some latent talent in there that we still that is still untapped. And for me, the only real question I have now is not just can he do it consistently, but can he and Alperen Şengün consistently have good games together? Because for the most part, it seems like when one has a solid game, the other one is somewhat off. And I think that their games can coexist relatively well. It doesn't.
There's no reason.
There's no reason they can't. And I believe it's just happenstance that it hasn't occurred yet.
So some of it, and again, this has been a very good stretch for Jalen Green, but some of it is just the fact that there hasn't been very many good Jalen Green nights, so there's not a lot of opportunities for it to cross over.
That's fair, but I do wonder that Jalen Green, in some of these nights where he, and I'm specifically looking at the Pelicans game, where he was a more ball-dominant player, as good as he has looked in this stretch, I still want the offense running through Alperen Şengün.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And if that's something where that would be an issue for, or in preventing Jalen from having these types of games consistently, then that's an issue, something that we'll have to delve into in the offseason, in terms of, okay, if Jalen can't consistently have these types of games, if we're going to run the offense through Alpi, then we need to make a move. And that's something that I guess they're just going to have to discover over the course of the rest of the season.
Yeah, and they're not incompatible players in any way, or at least their games are not incompatible. I do think a lot of it, like you said, is just kind of happenstance of why they can't seem to have good games on the same night. But there's been much, much more ill-fitting stars that have figured it out by staggering the minutes, where if Jalen Green, if there is, for some reason, they just cannot play together, Jalen Green has to be the focal point of an offense with every time he's on a basketball court, then you can still have him run bench units and be super overqualified to run bench units while Şengün plays with and against mostly starters. Like, that is a very easy thing to accomplish. Part of the reason, because Cam Whitmore plays the same position as Jalen Green and is very, very, very complimentary to Sengun's game and to a lot of the starters' games as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Rockets will be on the road to take on the Timberwolves tomorrow night. But
I think they're still the one seed Timberwolves.
I believe so.
They're up there. They're up there.
A couple all-stars and Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns. Yeah. Should be a fun one. Obviously, well, it won't be fun because the Rockets suck on the road and they'll probably lose. But coming up next, we are how many days away from spring training, Sean?
Nine.
Which is?
Nueve.
Marwin Gonzalez stays away from spring training. So we've got a couple Astros questions to dive in before we get to the fun stuff and Mount Rushmore plus one and the worst people and what we love from the weekend sports. So got a little Astros discussion for you coming up next on the Bullpen. He's Sean. I'm Andrew. This is ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. One of these guys cheats at fishing.
We got weights and fish.
There we go.
Thank you.
This is the Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Andrew Carlson and Sean Mapes with you till 2 o'clock. So we got 41 minutes left of some incredible, incredible sports radio content. If you want to get in on anything we have is we dive into some Astros pre-spring training discussion. You can do that on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So we are 9 days from spring training, Sean.
Nueve,
yes. Also, Marwin Gonzalez Day is away from spring training.
Yes, or for the hashtag real Astros fans, Hunter Pence Day is away. The ones that aren't Johnny come latelys, that aren't Andrew come latelys.
Sorry, I like winners.
You like cheaters, Mario Gonzalez. The most clear benefit of the Astros sign stealing scandal.
The best utility man the Astros have ever had. I will not have you slander
exactly
his name.
One year.
Yeah, and he was awesome.
And he got super paid and then stunk for the rest of his career.
Look, good for Marwin. All right. He had like 260 and had 20 bombs after he left the Astros.
Okay.
Which is a decent year. After that, he was totally fell off a cliff. But
yeah. But also, World Series champion. I'm not denigrating. I'm not dragging Marwin Gonzalez down.
No, you sound like a hater. You sound like an Astros hater right now. You sound like a Marwin hater.
No,
Marwin or Hunter Pence right now. Who are you taking?
Hunter Pence.
Hunter Pence, no question.
Give me the ring, baby. Marwin Gonzalez. Give me the ring.
You take Marwin off that team, I think, besides the one moment he had in the
World
Series.
You take Marwin off that team, they don't win the World Series.
Besides that moment, I think they do.
You take Hunter Pence off the 2008 Astros, and they don't win 75
yeah,
games.
There you
whatever.
Go.
Yeah.
They win 60 games instead of 70. Oh, no. What a disaster.
Probably more than that. He's not a 10-win player. Come on.
That team was pretty bad.
Brush up on your war, dude.
How's that? Is that how that works?
Yes.
Okay, so so Hunter Pence was only worth, like, actually 3 wins?
Yeah. Probably.
If you replaced him with, I don't know, Jason Lane or somebody else?
Yes.
That's
how war works.
Replacement yes. player? Okay.
Yes. If Jason Lane was a zero war player,
I don't know.
That's how it works.
So as we look ahead to Astros spring training, we got a couple questions here. We'll see if we get to both of them. Last week we tried some of this. We got through 2 questions. So I think BMAC had 5 for us. And honestly, to my long-windedness, we got through 2.
And if we were smart, we would have just rolled over the ones that we had from last week.
Yeah, I deleted them. So one of them might be a repeat. I don't really know. So I didn't take the time to go back and listen.
Lost to the sands of time.
Yeah, lost to the sands of bullpen time. So the first question I have for us here, Sean, is which Astro most needs to sustain their breakout from last year in order to help the Astros sort of improve from where they were last season or at least maintain where they were last year?
I think for me, I mean, Yainer Diaz is kind of like the easy layup answer of,
yeah,
of someone who, if he can do in 100, 120, 110 games, whatever the normal amount for a starting catcher is, that if he can do that, what he did, or if he can carry over what he did and just at that same rate, just have way more production, that would be absolutely massive addition to this lineup. I mean, you go from feeling like all right about this lineup to like this is legit, like a contending lineup that they have right now with Yiner basically slotting up. You know, you take your number 9 hitter who's an awful hitter in Martin Maldonado. And now all of a sudden you have the best hitting catcher in baseball, which what he would be if he played more last year. That to me is like such the I feel very basic for saying.
No, Yiner is like you're 100% right. Yiner's the
he had like what 26 home runs?
Yeah.
And he played 80 something games.
Yeah, so he had 300 something at bats. If you scale that up to 450, 500 at bats potentially.
Home runs? Yeah.
I mean,
it would be big if he could carry over that breakout and hit 50 home runs over a full season starting. Call me crazy.
I'm going to bring some negative vibes here because this is something I brought up in Connor and Beard. There is something that does scare me with Yiner a little bit, which is he reminds me a bit of Gary Sanchez when he broke out for the Yankees. When Gary Sanchez...
Hater.
You called him the Astros hater?
Yeah, Astros hater.
Look, I'm just saying there's some similarities in their games, and it concerns me a little bit with how free-swinging Yiner's been. And
let the apology be as loud as the disrespect.
I do think that his contact skills and his bat-to-ball skills are better than Gary Sanchez. So that should be a saving grace.
When we throw this back in your face when Yiner Diaz makes the Hall of Fame, we'll cut out that last thing that you said, and we'll just have the credit.
That he is Gary Sanchez 2.0.
To me, he is Gary Sanchez 2.0.
Yes, because that's exactly what I said. I just said that there's some similarities to their games. And
he sucks. Yes, that's what you said.
No, and Gary Sanchez was incredible for his first, what, two or three seasons with the Yankees. And then people realized, oh, we can just throw sliders away every single pitch, and Gary Sanchez is going to swing at all of them.
And crazy it took that long for them to figure it out. And yeah. It took baseball exactly 1 year to figure it out with Jeremy Pena.
Yeah.
It took him literally 1 year.
And when I was watching Yiner in the playoffs, it did concern me a little bit that he was swinging at some garbage, but at the same time, it's not like he was consistently getting at bats to really find himself in a rhythm, and it was clear that he was pressing at the plate to really try and make an impact, so I'm not going to hold it against him. For me, the answer to this question is Mauricio Dubon. He was someone who... I'm hoping he changed up his approach, and I'm hoping that will lead to whatever sustained success we saw from him last season, where he was just, you know, spraying soft contact all over the field and just lofting these little softball liners into the outfield basically all year long. That's something that I think the Astros really need from him, because if Mauricio Dubon returns to who he was prior to last season, all of a sudden those utility innings that you got from him look a lot more dicey, where, oh, Mauricio Dubon's filling in a third for Bregman today. No worries. Oh, Altuve missed 20 games. No worries. We got Mauricio Dubon in there, and he's hitting 280, and, you know, he's coming up with big hits when the team needs them. But if we go from that to, oh, Mauricio Dubon's hitting 250, and he doesn't walk at all, then we've got more of a problem.
Yeah, anytime you give a starter a rest day, which happens all the time in baseball, having a guy who can step in and play the position, not just with the glove as well as Dubon does.
Yeah, gold glove utility man in the American League this past season.
But then when you add in the gold glove utility with what you said, the production that he was showing at parts of last season, that's when you really go like, oh my God.
This guy's
like,
very valuable for us.
Not only are you giving Jose Altuve a day off, or if he's on the IL for 2 weeks, now it's not, oh my God, our lineup ends at 7 now, mm-hmm. instead of ending at 8. It now extends that lineup, or not extends it, you don't have the drop off of how many quality MLB hitters that you have in your lineup if Dubon is producing like that. It is interesting that you started off the segment with nothing but love for your favorite Astro of all time, Marwin Gonzalez.
Did not say
and
that.
And now...
Favorite utility man of all time.
Disrespect to Mauricio Dubon. I'm just saying it feels like you have a type.
Oh, so I like utility men.
Yes.
Look, I'm sorry that I want a player who can do a lot of things.
Yeah.
Okay. You like who you like, Sean.
Okay.
Don't hate love.
I'm not.
John?
I'm not yucking your yum.
Who would be your Astro that needs to sustain their breakout from last year to help the team improve or at least maintain where they were last season?
Yiner Diaz came to mind immediately. And then Mauricio Dubon was the second one that popped in my mind. I think you nailed it right on the money, Andrew. Having that guy that can come in, he's clearly, if he can hit the way he was, an upgrade from like a Litmus Diaz, you know. So I think that's huge. But I'm going to say JP France.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, the breakout that he had last year, I mean, I don't think the Astros are in the position they were last year without J.P. France. Not. So if he can sustain this breakout, he'll be a really good part of this rotation this year. The Astros have a good problem with the amount of pitching. If McCullers can stay healthy, come back and stay healthy, you can get some guys back healthy and maybe get Framber Valdez of old. I think the Astros are in a good spot.
Yeah, I like the shout of J.P. France a lot, just because on paper, once the Astros get healthy, they should have a lot of depth. But coming into the season, there are going to be a lot of question marks in that starting rotation, because Framber was phenomenal for the first half of last season. The Astros didn't let him go to the All-Star game, and then he just like mentally blew up. He just was not the same pitcher. And then Christian Javier was great for, the first month or so of the season?
Yeah.
And then the wheels slowly started to come off, and then the entire car just blew apart. And he sort of rediscovered things a little bit in the postseason, but it wasn't the same. He was a dude that was walking a tightrope basically every single time he went out on the field. So between that, Justin Verlander getting another year older, there are some questions in terms of what the Astros could be with their starting rotation. And if you can get J.P. France to be, I don't know, 80% of who he was last season, that's going to be a massive, massive boon to this rotation, because all of a sudden you're not having to put as much pressure on the rest of those guys. You're not putting pressure on Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia to try and rush things back from their respective elbow slash forearm surgeries. And look, if he can be that, it would shore up for me what is one of the biggest question marks I have on this team, which is the depth of their starting pitching.
Yeah, and they need to get through this year. And they have a lot of innings to eat, and J.P. France can eat them with, this doesn't really work, eat them with quality. That's kind of a mixed metaphor, you know. That, you know what I'm saying, though.
He's a quality eater.
Yes, he is a quality eater. He is the Joey Chestnut of the Astros rotation. That would be huge for them to get that level of production, basically out of thin air, like it was last year, where you just pull a guy up from Sugar Land and, you don't have to worry about when he's starting. There's not going to be an absolute disaster every time. And if they can, again, get that back this year as you're waiting for guys to get healthy, and the natural attrition that happens in Major League Baseball, where no one ever goes through a full season of, all of our starting pitchers stayed healthy. How awesome is this? Like, there are going to be times where you're going to need some depth in that rotation. And if J.P. France can provide that, that'd be massive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's enough of the serious conversation, because the rest of the show,
get it out of here.
Ugh, done with the serious sports talk.
Now it's time for dessert.
Yeah, that's damn right. Up next is the award-winning, groundbreaking, unbelievably unique Mount Rushmore Plus One segment. You won't want to miss what we have coming up for you next. So stay tuned. This is The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Thank you for listening to ESPN 97.5. It means the world.
A whole new world. A dazzling place I never knew.
Throughout the course of human history, singular moments have shaped who we are, who we'll become, and even the world as we know it. Some men discovered new worlds.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
One man advocated for the need to hire a contractor.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Others put pizza on a bagel.
When pizza's on a bagel, you can eat pizza anytime.
These courageous men gazed upon the monument and asked, what if we added one more? This is Mount Rushmore Plus One.
That is right. It is time for the groundbreaking, award-winning segment that we pull off 1:30 every Saturday afternoon when the Aggies are not playing sports. That is Mount Rushmore Plus One. This is The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Andrew Carlson alongside Sean Mapes and John Belmer. And look, this is when the fun begins, right? We're sort of building up our entire Saturday for Mount Rushmore Plus One.
Yes, we feel the need. If we could, the entire show would be Mount Rushmore Plus One, and then we'd leave. It would be a 15-minute show. But
I was just going to say Mount Rushmore Plus One every segment.
For 2 hours?
For two hours.
We could also do that. But we feel the need, and Joe George has made it abundantly clear that we do need to actually talk about sports. So that's what we do.
At least sometimes.
That's what we do for most of the first hour and a half of the show. And then, the last half hour, we have some fun.
All right. So without any further ado, who would like to kick off this edition of Mount Rushmore Plus One? Do you got it, Sean?
Yeah, I'll
Sports Entertainment, Sean?
I'll bat lead off.
And news?
I forgot what the acronym was. Terrible. How much brain power did that use? How much wasted brain power happened with, like, what's the and? Oh, or what's the A? Oh, and.
Look, there's a reason I went to the University of Houston, all right? A lot of brain power to waste over here.
Hey, big one coming up for the Cougs. We actually should have mentioned it earlier, the Cougs taking on.
I mentioned it in the first segment.
Yeah, but
deserves multiple mentions.
Deserves multiple.
All right, Cougs playing Kansas at 3 in Allen Fieldhouse.
Be there. If you see Andrew on the road, slow down. So, yeah. so he's running
so
late.
I can pass.
Oh, like you're an ambulance. Pull over to the shoulder. All right. Time for the Mount Rushmore plus one. This is in honor of Lewis Hamilton going from Mercedes to Ferrari.
Oh, big F1 guy. Yeah, that's
big
right.
Big F1 guy in 2025, which is hilarious that he's announcing a move for 2025.
So explain this to me, Sean. So he essentially has an entire lame duck year driving.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yes. Normally, this will happen in F1, but normally it's the second half of the season. It's like around August is when it happens, and they finish up in November, December. This is, to my mind, completely unprecedented of announcing before one season starts that next season you're going to be on a new team.
That's so. Are they even going to try with his car, or is it just going to be?
Really. They're going to try. Basically, they're going to favor his teammate George Russell in all decisions.
Okay, but this is mind blowing. I will let you continue with the Mount Rushmore plus one.
Lewis Hamilton, the greatest, or definitely the greatest racer of his generation, one of the greatest racers of all time. But I have to admit, it's going to be weird seeing him in a Ferrari fire suit.
Oh, I think I know where this is going.
Mount Rushmore plus ones of legends in weird jerseys.
Yes, yes.
Leading things off. I mean, this is to me the gold standard of it. This is the George Washington of Mount Rushmore plus one of legends in weird jerseys. Michael Jordan in a Wizards jersey. It's so strange, and honestly, it gets forgotten. I mean, The Last Dance, they did not mention that he ever played for the Wizards. They did not ever say that he played for the Wizards. It ended for all intents and purposes, his career ended in 1998 when he hit the shot over Byron Russell.
If they made the playoffs, I guarantee you that would have been The Last Dance. But they were like, yeah, you know what? You just dropped 50 points just backing it in and like chucking it up. Yeah, like, yeah, we're not putting that in there.
Yeah, awesome. Number two, Brett Favre on the Jets.
Oh, yeah.
That is such a weird, because that was actually kind of pretty close to a Lewis Hamilton type situation where the Packers did not want to trade him to the Vikings. The Vikings wanted Brett Favre. Brett Favre wanted to go to the Vikings, but they didn't want to trade him there, obviously. And so they traded him to the Jets. And the entire year, you're just like, so you're just kind of on the Jets for now. And then he'll be on the Vikings. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And he was also on the cover of Madden that year. Do you remember this? He was on the cover of Madden in that year that he got traded from the Packers to the Jets.
In a Packers jersey or in a Jets jersey?
So they originally he was on the cover in a Packers jersey, and then they re-released it and re-released like a cover for it where he was in a Jets jersey.
The more you know.
Yeah.
Very interesting year for him in New York that year.
Very interesting. Yeah. If you want to know more about that, ask Jake Asper. Sure. I'm sure he has speaking of The Last Dance, he has a 10-part documentary about the 1 year of Brett Favre in the Jets organization. Staying with football, Ed Reed on the Texans.
Oh, this one hurts, man.
He stunk out loud, and then speaking of the Jets, he was immediately awesome when he went to the Jets that year. But it is weird just seeing like a highlight from that year of a wide receiver running past Ed Reed.
That's all they did when he was on the field, by
the
way.
And then going, wait, that's Ed Reed. That's Ed Reed playing for the Texans. That's crazy, and you forget that it happened. But also, a legend, one of the best safeties of all time. Weird jersey. Allen Iverson playing for the Detroit Pistons. That was so weird when it happened. So weird, and did not work out. Also kind of weird for him to be in a Nuggets uniform, but they had a little bit more success there. And lastly, Andre Johnson in either a Titans or a Colts uniform, whichever one is weirder to you. They're both weird at the time. Both felt spiteful, but glad he's back in H-Town. Glad that he's back part of the Texans organization.
Man, I'm a little disappointed in you, Sean.
What? I didn't say Messi and Inter Miami?
No. There's a Houston one that I think you're missing here. It's a little bit before our times.
Oh, Hakeem and a Raptors jersey?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he played for the Raptors in 1999. Yeah. I was 3 years old. Okay. I knew that it was never weird. I never experienced the weirdness of it. It was always just a Wikipedia fact from the moment I started caring about basketball.
That's fair. John, do you want to go next or do you want me to go next?
Sure, I can go next.
Okay.
Kind of piggybacks off of Sean, but I'll admit Sean's list is way better than mine.
Don't sell yourself short
here,
John.
Let me be the judge of that. Let me see how good your
Okay. Well, we both took inspiration from Lewis Hamilton. His was, you know, took probably 10 seconds for him to think of a 10 times better way angle to take this off of. I went with all-time greats in American sports that hit free agency and went to different teams. Top five. Okay, so my number five is a very recent guy, but I feel like is already an all-time great because of his uniqueness in Shohei Ohtani going to the Dodgers, going to an iconic, I probably shouldn't say that around here, but an iconic team like the Dodgers. And
more iconic than the Angels.
Definitely more iconic.
Astros
than the
haters over
Unless
here.
Unless you want to talk about losing. The Angels are iconic losers. So that's another angle. But I think Ohtani to the Dodgers is going to be one of the biggest free agency sort of moves we see in the next, you know, 10 years.
In our lifetime, probably. And,
yeah, absolutely. I went baseball for my number four as well, but I went kind of back to the beginning of my years, 1993, Barry Bonds. Leaving Pittsburgh and heading over to San Francisco. Never won a ring with the Giants, but the impact he had, you know, being one of the greatest baseball players ever.
Do you have another baseball one?
I do not.
I don't want to step. Alex Rodriguez.
Yes. Throw him at me if you got him. I did the ones I could think about here. Number three, I went to football. I took the guy who terrorized us in Houston for quite a bit of time, Peyton Manning. In free agency in that debacle, ending up winning a Super Bowl with the Broncos.
Wanted to come to the Texans.
Wanted to.
Wanted to come to the Texans, but should've Gary Kubiak Texan. Said, no, we should've got Matt Schaub. We're good.
No thanks. And then he ended up winning a Super Bowl with Peyton.
Yep.
Yeah, he did.
Funny how the world works.
Not in Houston.
All right, my last two I flip-flopped on. But I'm going to go number two. The decision, yeah. LeBron James
to
the Heat. They won two rings. Has to be one of the biggest American sports free agency situations of all time.
It basically started what NBA free agency
is now. Yeah, the super teams. Yes, absolutely.
He didn't invent free agency, but he kind of invented free agency.
Number one, I think, and everybody can guess it, Brady to the Bucks.
Yeah.
I think it's the number one. He only won one ring with the Bucks, but it's number one because not only did he go and prove it, he could do without Belichick, he changed the conversation because we're not even talking about Belichick the same way anymore. We're not looking at him in the same light. So I think that's number one on my list.
I thought about Brady for the weird in a jersey one.
Yeah.
Him playing for Tampa was weird.
But it,
we got used to it. But it
just
weird.
Stretched out for such a period of time that you got.
And it helped that he was successful.
Yeah, that's the thing, too. Yes. Like, if Brady had gone out and had the season that he had in his final year in Tampa every year there, it probably would have felt different.
Yeah.
But, all right, that leaves me for my Mount Rushmore plus one. So, this was something that was inspired while listening to the 49ers broadcast last weekend. And this is a conversation I have had about this guy for a little while. And that would be one Ray McLeod III.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I know what this is. This leaked in the group text.
Yeah, so we discussed this in the group text between Sean, Brian, and myself. And
we'll add you, Belmer. Don't worry.
This is a Mount Rushmore plus one of names that are far too cool for how mediocre someone was or is as a player. And so number one on that list for me is Ray McLeod III. If that's not a championship boxer, I don't know what is. Ray McLeod III needs to be a heavyweight champion somewhere. Instead, he is like a average punt returner / special teams guy / fifth or fourth wide receiver.
Yeah, he also feels like a name where you go back and like, no Detroit Lion has ever done this since Ray McLeod in 1955.
Yeah, he's either an all-time legend like from way, way back.
Or a heavyweight boxer.
And instead, he's just some mediocre punt returner / kick returner. Up next. This one, the majority of this list is actually Houston themed because these are names that are close to my heart. And this was a name that you mentioned, Sean, Shromile Swift. Shromile Swift tormented the Rockets for years before he came over to Houston, and then he promptly was just very average.
Yeah.
But between the name Shromile Swift, like, by the way, the last name Swift, just phenomenal last name.
Yes.
You pair it with Shromile, you've got the alliteration.
Inventing the name Stromile, by the way. I don't think I've never heard of another person named Stromile.
And then he's just a ridiculous athlete on top of that who can throw down these monster dunks, but for whatever reason, just it never clicked here at Houston, unfortunately.
I can't stop thinking of the name Stromile.
But just a
Stromile Mapes.
Phenomenal, phenomenal name. Number three. This is a really fun one. Coco Crisp.
Yeah. Coco Crisp.
What's the
because
face
I don't remember. Who?
Coco Crisp was a center fielder. Yeah.
You probably remember for playing for Boston, the Red Sox, or the Indians.
Wow. That one escapes me. I don't remember that name.
And he was a good player, but he was nothing exceptional.
Yeah, he was a good center fielder.
And look, if your name is Coco, look, I'm expecting some big things, especially if you're... First name is Coco and your last name is Crisp.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Good is not good enough here.
If he was a little bit better, he could have dominated the cereal game forever.
Instead, this is Coco Crisp here for Coco Crisp.
Yeah. Like he could have that.
I thought you were making it up because of that.
No.
I thought this was like a game or something.
No,
you were tricking
us.
Okay.
No. This is real. And for the next two, we've got some Houston tie-ins here. Okay. And number four, LJ Hose. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal name. Look, the fact that you basically, I don't think you ever took a major league at bat, and yet was still selling jerseys and shirts inside Minute Maid Park, that tells you how good this name was.
Because they slapped the number zero on it.
Zero Hose.
Wearing a shirt that on the back says Zero Hose on it is tremendous.
The only thing that could have been better is if you had 69 as this number. That's the only thing that could have made the jersey better.
Also, LJ quietly kind of makes the name because LJ is such a weird abbreviation.
But yet it works.
But it works.
But it works.
You're not distracted by it. You're just like LJ.
LJ Hose. Wow.
Sticks in your head.
And then last but not least, the legends, Seth Beer. When he was drafted by the Astros, I was convinced this guy was going to be an absolute phenomenon at the major league level.
Number one selling jersey in America.
Dude, the numbers he would have done in Minute Maid Park in the team store with beer and whatever number they wanted to plaster on the back of that, unfortunately, just was not to be.
He has to wear the number 99, right?
Oh, you have to.
He has to wear like the biggest number you could possibly
have
wear.
Have to. So that concludes this week's edition of Mount Rushmore Plus One. Coming up next, we finish things as we always do here on the Bullpen with the worst people in sports this week, or the worst person in sports this week, and the things we loved the most. That is coming up next. Don't miss it. This is the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
You found ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I can feel it.
I can feel it down in my plums. You're getting a nice bluish hue.
This is the Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Bullpen with you for a few more minutes here. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Andrew Carlson and Sean Mapes with John Delmer behind the glass spinning the tunes. And we're going to finish up the show as we do every single week. And that's by naming our worst person in sports this week and the things we loved. But we got to get the angry stuff out of the way first. Swimming with the angry sharks, I think, as Brian says. So we're going to dive right into the pool infested with angry sharks, and we're going to name our worst people in sports. Sean, who you got?
Worst person in sports this week, Jim Harbaugh. Yeah, you've had it too good for too long, Jim Harbaugh. Everyone kissing your ass. And then you come out and say, as part of this press run as being the new L.A. Chargers coach, on Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy, quote, don't be surprised when/if he's the number one quarterback off the board in the draft. That's my prediction right now. Listen, dude, he's not your quarterback anymore. You don't have to pump his tires, all right? You don't have to lie to America. Don't get on TV and lie to America telling us that J.J. McCarthy might be the number one pick in the NFL draft. Get out of here.
If you believe in him that much, trade Justin Herbert for a slew of picks and go get J.J. McCarthy.
His ass. I guarantee you he'll be available at number five.
My worst person in sports this week, as I was going to go to John, but John's away from the microphone for a second. So I'm going to name the line makers for UH Kansas that's going to tip off in about an hour and 7 minutes here as the worst people in sports this week. Why the hell would you give Kansas any more ammunition than they already have and already need than to make UH a favorite in Fog Allen? Like, why would you do that? UH is on the road at Kansas. a place where Kansas basically never loses, and they have decided to make UH a favorite. It started off as a 2.5-point favorite. It's been bet down to 1.5, and I, for the life of me, despise the line makers because, look, I appreciate the respect. I do, but I don't want it.
Do you think that Kansas storms the court if they beat U of H?
That would be hilarious. That would be absolutely hilarious. They are underdogs at home, and there's already so much narrative here with the Cougs being the new power in the Big 12 that we don't need to give Kansas any more ammunition. Just make it a pick 'em. Like, that's all I'm at. Make it a pick 'em. I'm not saying we got to be under. Just make it a pick 'em.
Please. We're not about that life. We don't want heavy as the crown, and we do not want.
I don't want that smoke.
We don't, you, because now what's going to happen is, I mean, if Kansas wins, because I do think that U of H is in a good spot to win. But if they win, I mean, now Kansas can go the, no one believed in us. Everyone crowned their ass. Now we came in as underdog. Yeah, no, this is the worst spot to possibly be in, is to be, have your team expected to do something that is incredibly hard to do.
Thanks, bookmakers. John, what is your worst person, or who is your worst person in sports this week?
I think it's you.
Yeah, because I don't have one. Y'all have always done it together with BMAC, so I didn't even think about it. Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
My bad.
Andrew Carlson, worst person in sports.
Yeah,
there you go.
Me tossing it to you, thinking that you had one. That's my apologies.
Yeah, Cam Whitmore passed.
Future, though, I will come up with one.
Yeah.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. I'm sorry.
I think he's not in the rundown. Being in this
no, he's the anonymous duck.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. I got you.
For anyone with Google Docs, you would understand that. But anyone without that they would be totally clueless. All right, we'd backstroke as I have to make Brian McDonald mistake.
How can none of these hosts get... I am unstuck by that.
As we backstroke from the...
It's swimming!
From the pool infested with the angry sharks over to the... I don't know, the pond of tranquility?
Sea of tranquility.
Whatever. Sea of tranquility. And so
it's not even my saying.
We name the things we love from sports this week. Sean, what you got?
Thing I love in sports this week, Peter Thiel and a group of venture capitalists, rare that they're a thing I love, but they are funding the Enhanced Games, an Olympic-style competition that allows performance-enhancing drugs. The events include track and field, swimming, gymnastics, weightlifting, and combat sports. The perfect idea. And finally, what we all would sit back and say, man, if I was a billionaire, know what I would do? I would start the steroid Olympics. Peter Thiel is actually making it happen with his money. Salute to you. I am watching. I'm seated for it. Pay-per-view, whatever it is, whatever it needs to be, I am paying for it.
You think they get the 100-yard dash under 9 seconds?
They should break every record.
All right, for me, the thing that I loved most in sports this week, Sean, is something near and dear to your heart, and that's the Moody Center.
Oh, yeah.
A.K.A. for Tita North. The Cougs went in there, they kicked some Longhorn ass, and guess what? The Moody Center is a phenomenal environment, phenomenal atmosphere. The amenities are the best for any arena that I have ever been in. So, salute to you. You were hospitable, except for the one Texas fan that cursed at some people in our row. But other than that, Moody Center, phenomenal.
You can hear both sides on that.
Great, great experience. And I would say I'm going to be back, but the Longhorns are never going to invite us back. So, undefeated in the Moody Center all time. That'll do it for the bullpen this week. I'm Andrew Carlson. I've been alongside Sean Mapes. John Belmer has been behind the glass making us sound fantastic all afternoon long. We'll talk to you guys next Saturday at noon, hopefully with Brian McDonald. Until then, see ya.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, home of Old Greg.
I know what you're thinking. Here comes Old Greg.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.